You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back podcast. I'm your host, Jan Svensson. This podcast spotlights Broadway actors, shows, and organizations in their pursuit of social impact and philanthropy. Join us as some of the brightest lights on Broadway share their stories about their favorite charities and how they got involved, and the people and the causes who benefited from these philanthropic efforts. My guest this week is Dr. Luce Towns Miranda, best known as Lin-Manuel Miranda's mom. Luce is a board member of Planned Parenthood Action Fund, the Gilder Lehrman Institute of American History, the American Theater Wing. She is a psychologist and psychoanalyst, and her career has focused on providing services to the underserved. She was appointed to the New York State Psychology Board, and she and her husband, Luis, have raised Luce Miranda Crespo, Lin-Manuel, and Miguel Towns. They have six grandchildren, and they live in Washington Heights. Luce is an activist and a philanthropist, and I'm so proud to call her a dear friend. Luce, you are here with me finally on Broadway Gives Back podcast. Welcome.
Thank you, Jan.
It is such a pleasure to have you. I had your husband and your son on the podcast back in January, and I've been scheming to get you on here for the last few months. So we know each other pretty well, and I was wondering if I could ask you a few sort of rapid-fire personal questions so that our listeners can get to know you, too, and see what an amazing person you are.
Shoot.
Ready? Okay, yes. Let's do this. If you were an animal, what animal would you be?
Oh, I would want to be a butterfly. I don't want, an insect, not an animal. Butterfly.
Okay. What's your favorite time of day, sunrise or sunset?
Sunrise.
Favorite food?
I love lobster.
Guilty pleasure.
All things sugary.
Yes, me too.
Not chocolate, sugar. I love sugar. It's terrible.
If you could use three words to describe yourself, what three words would you select?
Grounded, thoughtful, and hardworking.
Tell me one thing about yourself that nobody would guess is true.
I can't think of anything that nobody would think it's true. People pretty much know me. I think I'm an open book.
I think people would be surprised by the fact that you love playing like games and using your, you know, you're on your phone all the time.
Oh, I play Words with Strangers because most of my friends don't play Words with Friends.
There you go. What is your favorite Broadway show? And you can't say Hamilton, In the Heights, or Freestyle Love Supreme.
I was blown away by Les Mis because when I saw it, I thought of it as a woman's play. But my first play ever was Men of La Mancha, which again, I was focused on the woman. Dulcinea was just amazing to me and how she could be seen so differently. You know, and in this cancel culture, she certainly is very different.
Mm-hmm.
Dulcinea. Oh.
Dulcinea. What do you most give a damn about?
My family's safety and happiness.
And what would you say is one of the biggest mistakes you've ever made in your life?
Not going on a trip with Luis to Israel many, many decades ago because I had gone somewhere else and I didn't think I'd take the time from work. But it was a one-in-a-lifetime trip that I missed out on.
There's so many things in your life that you could be proud of. Name one of the things you're most proud of that's more personal to you.
Well, I think having a really flourishing marriage is not an easy task. And it's something we've both worked hard at, which then benefits everybody in our family, which is wonderful.
What TV sitcom or what Broadway show family would you want to be a member of?
Schitt's Creek's family. I love Schitt's Creek. They are just so wonderful.
That's so great. I love that show. It was so funny. I had this the same conversation with Marissa Jarrett-Winoker, and she said the same thing. And I said for myself, it would probably be Osage, August Osage County.
Oh, my God.
But listen, speaking of families, I want to talk about you, but I want to talk about your incredible family first, because you and Luis have co-created this incredible family, and you have this amazing marriage. You guys are loyal, you're engaged, you're accomplished, you're giving, and most importantly, you're the most loving family that I think I know. And I just wondered, what's the secret? What's the secret to having a family the way you have created your family?
Well, and this is psychological too. We keep each other in mind. We are constantly thinking about the other. And I think for Luis and I, we check in with each other at the beginning of the day, hardly ever during the day because he's too busy, at the end of the day. And we do the same thing with the kids. We're constantly checking from the time they were little. But even now, keeping track of anything that's bubbling up and how things are going in general.
So when you say checking in, it's not just like, hey, how was your, is it, hey, how was your day? Or how are you feeling? Like, is it a different kind of check-in?
I mean, what are you doing? You know, and looking for opportunities to get together. This past week, for the first time in a while, the four of us got together, went to lunch at the Rainbow Room, then went to see Chicken and Biscuits. And that family funeral reminded us of our respective families, because at one point, one of Luis's uncles when he died, an unknown daughter did show up at that funeral.
Okay. Yeah. And the dynamics in your family are so special. I mean, you guys are just, you're so connected. And one of the things that you do as a family is you are philanthropists as a family, and you are focused on doing good. It's part of like the DNA in your family. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how your family philanthropy works.
Well, that has been one of the blessings of Hamilton, that we recognize the need to give back and are in that position. And it's interesting because a lot of what we do is look at what we're most interested in and what our lanes are. So I've got the lane that I've always been interested in, mental health, women and children. So I've been involved that way. And Lin-Manuel and Luis, well, Luis has been in politics, so his is a combination of political action that we all get caught up in as well. And then Lin-Manuel with the arts. So there have been different programs that he's funded and initiatives that he's started. Like, he was very concerned during the pandemic to raise money for Broadway Cares. He knew how hard hit the Broadway community had been.
But even, you know, Sita and Louis, they are involved in the philanthropy, and Vanessa, I mean, you do this as an entire group. And, you know, I've seen it for years.
We actually have biannual meetings around what our projects are and where they're headed and what's involved with them, how they're doing. So we get together, each of us discuss our particular projects.
I think that's so interesting. And I actually was witness to one of these meetings once. And you guys, you have a PowerPoint presentation, and you kind of go around the room and you talk about what causes are important, and you have a discussion about what you're going to support, right? And yes, how, who's going to be involved and how you're going to do it. And everybody has a voice at that table in the family, right?
Yes. And Lisa's really worked at even having the children pick some organization or area that they want to be involved in. So
when you say the children, you mean your children or your grandchildren?
Grandchildren. Grandchildren.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're tasked with giving back. Like the youngest one was involved with a rescue pet animal shelter in his neighborhood. So there's constantly a way of looking to get them involved early.
And I've seen you all have sort of both a strategic and a sort of emotional connection to the philanthropies that you select. You are very strategic because you do have these meetings about it and you sort of plan how you're going to support each of the causes. But then there's also an emotional component because everybody gets to pick, you know, what sort of rings a bell for them or what makes them feel the need to be involved.
And at any given moment, like after Hurricane Maria, we were all focused on what initiatives could take place in Puerto Rico.
Right.
So Luz, let's talk a little bit then about the Miranda Family Fund.
Right. It's monies that we have donated into the Hispanic Federation that then get targeted for the projects that we want. It's a sizable sum that, you know, from year to year, depending on, you know, yearly proceeds. But so from there, we've all devised different projects that then get funded, like right after Hurricane Maria. And the Federation has also contributed. So it's not just all our money. Like following the hurricane, one of the big initiatives that went into place in Puerto Rico was a mental health initiative, where at the University of Puerto Rico, the Department of Psychology, Social Work, and Psychiatric Rehab got together and with their students went out into the hard-hit communities to do a variety of different interventions. And it wasn't immediately after, it was like the year after, but the effects of the trauma that were so long following the immediate event really left that entire population traumatized, but it was worse in the areas that were worst hit. So that program went on for 3 years and wound up covering the earthquakes as well. And then the beginning of COVID. I mean, it was like, talk about
a triple whammy. Yeah,
absolutely. So that one has now subsided, but that was really important at the time, as well as other initiatives that Luis undertook with agriculture and with just even initially feeding communities. And he, because of his knowledge of the island, went directly to municipalities. He did not go to the government, which can be more of a hindrance than a help, and was able to begin delivering food and getting lots of materials available to people within a week or so of the hurricane striking.
He is a man of action.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, I want to talk about all the amazing things that you do. But before we leave Luis and your family.
We're not leaving Luis.
We can't leave him. can you tell everybody the story of how you two got together? I just think it's so romantic. And, you know, again, we're talking about what an amazing family you have. And you said that the secret sauce is really your marriage. So can you just talk about like the beginnings of Luis and Luis?
Well, Luis had finished college with a 4.0 at 18. And the director of clinical psych at NYU at the time was recruiting a very diverse class. He wanted half the class to be diverse and half the class to be majority. So he went to the University of Puerto Rico and recruited students. And Luis was one of the students that he recruited. So he began, and he was 2 years ahead of me, even though I'm older than him. So we actually met during the, he interviewed me for the program, although he didn't because he arrived too late. He had been at a protest, but we got to meet then. And we were in classes and activities for 2 years before we started going out. And our first date was in April and we were married in September.
Yeah. And you just knew.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In some ways, because I had known him for 2 years and I had observed so much, I can remember even telling him that I knew whoever married him was going to have an amazing life and was going to be a very lucky person. Pitching myself, kind of.
And what about the significance of the Rainbow Room? Wasn't that your first date or something?
No. We actually went to a concert, Haciendo Punto en Otro Son. We went to a nightclub at El Corso, And that was our first date, was two different activities. The Corso's no longer there. It was this great nightclub on 86th Street back in the day.
Wow. So now let's talk a little bit about you, separate and apart from your family, if we can do that. Your story is so compelling, and you've been so honest in talking about your story. I think about that time that Lynn interviewed you for the Planned Parenthood. And I guess there's sort of three buckets. There's the mental health bucket, there's Planned Parenthood, and then there's sort of the theatrical, you know, the American Theater Wing bucket. But, you know, personally, mental health is one of the top causes that I, you know, am involved in supporting these days. I just think that the more individuals in society that get help that they need and the support they need, the better we're all going to be, because it affects so many other issues. You're a psychologist, a psychoanalyst. What are your biggest concerns about mental health in the country or in the world today? And what support do you think can and should be provided?
Jan, since I was in graduate school, I've always had the sense that early childhood is huge and important. The absence of support for mothers and families in this country, I think, is just appalling. From pregnancy on, given the child death and maternal death rates, but a person's capacity to withstand a lot of conflict and turbulence in their lives is often, is determined by how solid your early foundation is. The first 3 years of our life are huge. I've been very, very involved in trying to understand and support interventions related to attachment. I've been in a study group for over 20 years. I'm in another group that's involved with attachment, because they're finding more and more that the types of attachment that get developed, and they are predictable at 4 months. You can observe the attachment pattern at 4 months and see it replicated at 12 months. There are videotapes of moms, and you study 1/16th of a slide of a second, and you see a tremendous amount of subliminal stimulation that goes on that you can't capture with the naked eye that is shaping that attachment. It is fascinating. And that's one thing that is underplayed in the medical field. I did a presentation at the American Academy of Pediatrics and was invited to another conference because pediatricians give very, very attention to attachment in general. And the more attachment is recognized as a real linchpin in the development of a person, the sooner people are going to be able to better appreciate the importance of, say, paid family leave following a birth and things of that nature. But attachment, Jan, is huge, and it impacts your adult functioning. For the rest of your life, you will see these patterns.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I see it in my family. Explain the idea. We were talking at dinner the other night, you and I, about this book that I was reading that was by Oprah Winfrey and Dr. Bruce Perry, called What Happened to You, that talks about this early attachment. And it was, you know, I thought I knew a lot about this, but after talking to you and after reading that book, my mind was blown that it happens so early in life, 4 months old. And what is it like? What would healthy attachment look like? And what does non-healthy attachment look like? And then what can we do to support people that need help?
In the most disturbed dyads, what you see is a mother's failure to recognize the baby's state. And the majority of this is nonverbal, so that the child isn't, the instructions during the videotaping are that you're supposed to play with your child. Some parents feel compelled to try to make the child be very active. They'll loom in, they'll overshake the baby or try to get them to be responsive. But when there's too much of an effort with that attuning to where the baby is, what you wind up getting are kids that are averting and trying to just get away from the overstimulating parent, or they'll get distressed, or they'll shut down. That you actively see kids trying to avoid the stimulation and the connection to this parent who's clearly unattuned, versus even with a little quiet baby, just trying to have them see you and you see them, and just figuring out where they are and following them.
Meet them where they are.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah, the attention to their response to your cues is huge. And it's sad because, like, I've known lots of moms say that it's stupid to talk to babies because they don't understand and they don't know. They just find it silly somehow, rather than not understanding that that's how a baby will, one, learn language, and two, potentially be very soothed depending on what their state is. But so much of it is huge, huge.
And you've worked so hard in helping women who are underserved. And so imagine being a mom and, you know, maybe you don't have a great marriage, or you don't have a partner that's helping you with this child, and you're working and you've got other kids and you're stressed out, you know, and that affects, you know, the baby as well, right?
Right, right. I once ran an early childhood program. Actually, it was during the mid-80s, the height of the crack epidemic. My therapeutic nursery had mostly grandmothers with their toddlers coming in, because the mothers had gotten caught up in the epidemic. But the other issue is, depending on the, you know, for first moms tend to be anxious, so that there'll be some anxiety, but the more they're able to see the responsiveness of their baby, the calmer they get. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is getting to know the baby, and then how to elicit a connection, and then be able to work on how to soothe the baby. Because that, you know, it's interesting, because when I worked with parents, what I would tell them is, your job as a parent, especially with a baby, is to have them cry as little as possible. You know, there's this myth, at least in the Hispanic community, that if you pick up the baby every time it cries, you're spoiling him. I said, no. You cannot spoil a newborn, or even up to a one-year-old. You can't spoil them. What you're letting them know is that no matter what happens, you're there for them. It's the foundation of trust and comfort.
Gosh, so that whole theory about letting your baby cry for 3 nights so that it'll sleep through the night?
No.
Well,
no,
now I know where I went wrong.
But to this day, there's lots of these structured sleep, you know. It's interesting because I will often tell parents that providing the care that they need now doesn't mean that there's going to be a mistake. Like kids sometimes are afraid they won't sleep in their own beds.
Right.
With both of my kids, I would put a chair next to the bed. I would not get in the bed with them, because the body warmth is something that they will then miss once you leave the bed, even if they're asleep. Mm-hmm. So I would sit next to their bed until they fell asleep, no matter how long it took, mm-hmm. and soothe them and sang to them. And
so that's where Lynn gets his singing.
Oh no, this little guy, The funniest story is, he was born in January. Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, we went out. We went to a club. The music would start. The baby would start. The music would stop. The baby would stop. After about 3 numbers, I said, Louise, I'm too pregnant. I can't stay here. This kid's not going to, every time the music starts, I can't listen. So he was responding in utero.
That's
to
hysterical.
Music. Yeah.
But let's go back to, you know, speaking of Lynn, so you and Lynn and I worked together on a big fundraiser for Planned Parenthood
yes.
back in 2017, right after the election. And it was a record-breaking fundraiser that we worked on, and people were so, they just wanted to do something. They wanted to give, and there was so much strife going on, and so many people were reacting to the election news. But you were such a vocal person, and you and Lynn did this campaign together for Planned Parenthood.
People think that Planned Parenthood's only about abortions. Planned Parenthood provides so much general care and medical care, not just terminations or counseling, regarding pregnancy, so that people get tested for cancers, for STDs, and general well-being. Right now, because there's restrictions in Texas, what's most needed is funds to help with the legal battles that are taking place there. So the Action Fund helps with voting and with trying to shape legal cases to allow for women to be able to exercise their choices. So people who are interested in helping should look to donate to the Planned Parenthood Action Fund or Planned Parenthood Votes. These are not deductible dollars, but they're very much needed dollars in order to fight against these efforts to restrict women's bodies.
And then there's also the International Pro Familias organization. Can you talk, what is that?
Planned Parenthood, there's the national organization in the United States, and then there's been this international, which are very separate entities. So Puerto Rico had a choice of becoming part of the national, and they chose to become part of the international. So when I got to know Pro Familias in Puerto Rico, what I learned was that that organization every year gives a fixed amount of money no matter what happens. So after Hurricane Maria, they got no additional dollars and were struggling to reopen and provide service. What we also learned was that their abortion providers were, one was in his late 60s, the other one was in his 70s. And there were, they had gotten some monies to assist women who couldn't afford abortions, but those funds were running out. So with our fund and with the help of the Federation, we've started a education program where the primary person who does terminations in Puerto Rico has been teaching and certifying other docs in the procedure. So there have been like four cycles of three doctors being trained. So there's now like a dozen more doctors, two of which have been hired to help at the clinic, in order to ensure that the service can go forward. Training in abortions is not required or provided necessarily in medical school or residency programs.
Really?
Wow. So that's why there was such a dearth of providers in Puerto Rico. And now with having provided funds for training these docs, it's like a 3-month cycle and you're trained. But that is not provided in residencies or medical. So it's not required. Then the second one is we've provided funds for, because there's a lot of women who can't afford terminations, so we've subsidized them. And then the third project within Pro Familias has been just sex education and information regarding the access, as well as there was a real spike after the hurricane in domestic violence and pregnancies resulting from domestic violence. So there's been an increase in many more, especially younger women, coming forward and seeking services because they've been survivors of assaults.
Well, I know that Planned Parenthood is, as you said, it's so much more than just, a place where you go to get abortions. You know, people
absolutely
get their health care there. You have a very personal relationship to Planned Parenthood because they helped you when you were younger, right?
Right. That's where I would go for birth control. When I was in college, I went there. I think I told you in the podcast, I had cancer at 19. And my endocrinologist, who was this stuffy older man, could tell from the blood panel that I was on contraceptive. So, and I was on it for a short period of time. He said, so if you insist on such behavior, I suggest you get a diaphragm. I said, okay, fine. I'm taking care of myself, dude. What's wrong with you?
Right. Well, changing those attitudes, but, one step at a time. And, I never realized until we had gotten closer that Planned Parenthood, there was this international and the national, and they were different, and how they helped people and supported people in different ways. Right. And I didn't realize that Puerto Rico had chosen the international Planned Parenthood.
Right. So they get a little, some of the affiliates, because of their connection to people that they know in Puerto Rico, provided support after Hurricane Maria, but there's no official support. Although I've raised at the national that our Supreme Court's going to have jurisdiction over what happens there. So there really needs to be some legal liaison between the two, because there is an impact.
Right.
It's dicey.
It is dicey. We're so grateful that you're on that board and that you're working on behalf of all these, women who need that support. Speaking of boards, you're also on the American Theater Wing board.
Yes.
So I wondered these days, what is your role on the board, and what is the mission of the board on the wing?
A big interest of the board has been to make it more diverse, and there is a recognition of the need to make the great white way not so white.
Well, and the other piece of that goes perfectly with that role that you have at the American Theater Wing is the fact that you're also helping to create a pipeline of artists of color and people of color to work in the theater through your fellowships.
Oh, yes. My son is really big on that. He's got a fellowship program, and he funds a fellowship at the O'Neill up in Connecticut. So it's interesting because their most recent initiative was the role of casting. They got a fellow in a casting office as well, which should lead to expanding the diversity of individuals being cast, but if there are no diverse casters, how do you get,
Exactly.
So it's a very nice addition to what they've been doing.
Going back to this idea of being philanthropic, a lot of people have, obviously you are setting the stage for, your family, for your kids and your grandkids, which you talked about. But what about you when you were, when you were a child, and did you see somebody model like sort of philanthropic behavior? Were your parents and your family, were they involved in giving back in the community? How did you come about this?
Well, I think I grew up more in the Catholic model, where you went to church and you put money in the basket, and when there were special collections, you gave for, knowing that there were others that were in need. If we didn't have the means to actually be involved in a lot of philanthropy. And I think even when Luis and I were, living paycheck to paycheck for so many years, we always did set aside a little bit. Like, I always sent money to Planned Parenthood. I always sent money to Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. There were these little pet, I love the doc that is in Haiti, the Partners in Health. So there have been lots of different little projects that we just gave a little bit each year within the extent that we could afford it. But now it's, turned into a much larger, project.
But you and Luis have always, given your blood, sweat, and, your time to good causes. And, that's the other piece of this, too, is it's not always about the money, but it's also about, look at the involvement. You're on so many boards and you do so much. So it's
right. The Community Mental Health Clinic up in Washington Heights, I was an administrator, Bronx Lib at the time, came in, did the paperwork because I knew what the paperwork was, to hire the staff and the director, and exited. So I did, there were two small projects before the clinic opened, and once the clinic opened, they kept me on. So I've been working in a limited capacity, having begun all those programs in a clinic in Washington Heights for over 20 years. Now I'm in a clinic once a day in the heart of the South Bronx, which has and it's interesting because the state has developed what's called a CCBHC. It's a comprehensive mental health and substance abuse combination program. They're rolling out, recognizing that mental health and substance abuse are co-related. Mm. People that have addictions usually have significant difficulties in their self-medicating. So the state, in its wisdom, has rolled out these programs that require you now to take care of people with significant substance abuse disorders, where prior to just a few years ago, if they had an addiction, you didn't see them at a mental health clinic. And now that work is being done together.
And that work is so important that you do that.
It's huge. It's huge.
You know, your family, and I say your family, not just your son, but your family has so many fans and so many people that love you and follow you in social media and are interested in what you're doing and what you're saying. And I wondered, what advice would you give about being a person who cares and making a difference in the world? How would you advise one of your fans to, you know, to be philanthropic or to be a person who gives back or be of service?
Again, it would depend on what their particular lane is and to find a way to be of service and the value in that lane, basically.
Yeah.
Like I pretty much stick in mental health because I know it. I can't get into the arts because that's just not my field. Although Luis dabbles in a little bit of everything.
Right. But you're on the American Theater Wing board and you're on the Gilder Lehrman board. So you're dabbling in arts too. So
yeah,
you've got a few lanes.
Yes. Yeah, it's true.
Well, all I know is that the world is a better place because you are in it and because you do have a few lanes that you give back to. And, you know, we're so appreciative that you took this time today to talk to us. And I'm going to give you the last word. Anything you want to say before we sign off?
We just have to keep trying to live our best lives. That's what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, because you definitely make our lives better. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you. You too, by the way.
Love you.
Bye-bye. Love you too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Broadway Gives Back podcast. Broadway Gives Back is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Special thanks to my producing partner, writer, editor, and friend, Jim Lochner. And thank you to everyone at BPN, including Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and Kimberly Garris. I'd also like to thank Julian Hills from the Bulldog Agency and Eric Becker from Broderick Street Music. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. You can also follow Broadway Gives Back on Facebook and Instagram at Broadway Gives Back Podcast and on Twitter at Broadway Gives. To learn more, visit bpn.fm/Broadway Gives Back. Thanks so much.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.